Columnist George Will started a national debate recently with his recent column criticizing the violence in football. He wrote, "Are you ready for some football? First, however, are you ready for some autopsies?" Here is Will on ABC's This Week show on Sunday.
Over 20 yards, which is where a lot of football is played, these guys are as fast as cats, fast as running backs. And the kinetic energy is producing what is called chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE. Get used to that because it's going to be a subject of lawsuits and other things. The crucial word is chronic, repeated, small but repeated blows to the head. The brain floating in the pan in the skull, now we know, causes early dementia and other problems.
So Will thinks that the violence, the injury and death issues and lawsuit issues will lead to the end of football. Do you agree? Our guest does not, and we will hear why this hour. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, August 10th. Has football become too violent? Can it be fixed? Are we seeing the beginning of the end of football? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Jason Keidel, sports writer for WFAN, the CBS affiliate in New York City. His recent column is called, "Are We Witnessing Football's Free Fall?" And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. So are we witnessing football's free fall?
No, we're not. I, first of all, want to say I don't pretend to have Mr. Will's experience, credentials, or brain cells. However, even the most brilliant men and women can make a faulty argument. I don't know if you recall, as kids, we were told about the five W's. Always find out who, why, when, and where, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's got four of them right. He has the when wrong. In other words, CTE, which causes mental illness, Lou Gehrig's disease, suicidal thoughts, depression, etc., is very prevalent and very much a problem. What Mr. Will has wrong is the timing. This has been going on probably for as long as people have been playing football. So this is not a new phenomenon. What's different is the technology, and we're able to connect the dots now. Now we know what causes it. But in truth, people have been having these problems for 50, 60 years.
Yeah,
in the NFL.
Sure. So now we know what's causing it, and now there are all sorts of lawsuits being filed, and now maybe something needs to be done about it.
Well, that's here's my view on it. What Will's trying to get to is sort of this grassroots notion of children playing football at a very young age, say 8, 9 years old, and then going to high school and then going to college, and then if they're lucky enough or gifted enough, playing in the NFL. What Will's concern is that once all the data is out, that parents will no longer let their children play football. The NFL's problem was not necessarily the violence of the sport, but withholding information. What the lawsuits claim is the NFL knew how perilous playing football was, how deleterious the effects were on the human brain, and didn't share it with their constituents. If that's the case, they're in a lot of trouble. If you're asking me, does this kill the sport, I say no, because, frankly, too many people are still willing to watch it. As sad a commentary as that might be on us as a species, on some level, we enjoy violence. It just happens to be that they're highly skilled at applying that violence, but this is kind of what we are. Now, if a mom or a dad doesn't want their son to play football because of all the new information, I certainly respect that, and it's probably the prudent thing to do. But the problem is not necessarily with the Pop Warner kid. The problem is with the guy who's been playing football for 10 years and had what Will referred to as the repeated head trauma.
So do you think, though, football needs to be changed in any way to make it safer?
Well, here's the thing, Joy. You have incredibly skilled, incredibly strong, incredibly large, incredibly fast men lunging, galloping at up to 30 miles an hour, lunging into each other head first. And the basic physics of that, in my opinion, are such that I don't know what you can do to change the inevitable effects of that, which is the brain rattling inside the skull. You know, even though we are bigger and faster and stronger now, the 40-yard dash, the fastest player in the NFL runs about a 4.2 or a 4.3, 4.2 or 4.3 second 40-yard dash. You know, 20, 30 years ago, they were running 4.4. So we're talking about microscopic improvements. The basic problem is we have large people hitting each other at high speeds, and I don't think there's a helmet or a shoulder pad that can change the results of that. So what you might be getting at is, then do we regulate a person's ability to play football for a living? And then that sort of becomes a philosophical and political issue. I tend to lean towards let people do what they want as long as they have all the information and they aren't committing any crimes. But I understand the concern.
Yeah, I guess. Right. I guess I'm thinking I've heard speculation that, you know, something could be done to discourage this type of head-to-head hit and that there could
well,
be.
Yes. Yes. Well, what's happened is you have a confluence of legislative changes in football. Namely, you have a reduction in violent practices. When I say violent practices, all football teams right now in the NFL are in training camp. They're preparing for the new season. It used to be they could practice as long as they want, as often as they wanted, and as violently as they wanted. Now that is being shaved back drastically. You can only practice with pads, with contact, only once a day. And now you also have players being penalized for helmet-to-helmet contact. We see it all the time on the news now. We see these clips on endless loop of quarterbacks getting knocked out and wobbling back to the sideline after, you know, clearly a defensive player who is 250 pounds with 2% body fat leading with his helmet, which basically makes him a weapon. I mean, let's be honest, that's what he is, a weapon. What the NFL is doing now is they are fining that person for applying that hit illegally and docking them not only pay, which is really pocket change for them, unfortunately. $15,000 doesn't mean anything to these guys. But they're also suspending them. So and then it accrues. So if you get penalized for one illegal hit, you might get suspended for one game. And then it progresses, two, three, four. And then eventually, God willing, the plan is that they would get the message and no longer lead with their heads.
Yeah. Didn't Will also hint in that column that people, now that we know that this violence is inherent in the game and that's causing these injuries and even death in some cases, mm-hmm. might shun watching the game?
Well, in theory, that sounds right, but there's no data to suggest that that's happening. In other words, the NFL's revenues just keep spiking. It's a $9 billion a year enterprise. And now with the influx of fantasy football, I don't pretend that everybody listening here is a football geek, but, you know, with the influx of fantasy football and mock drafts and all these things, people are more interested than ever in football. And plus there's the gambling component, which the NFL doesn't like to acknowledge, but that's another huge source of revenue for them. Well, for people watching football is gambling. So I think we would need to give it a couple of years to see if this, in fact, affects viewership. But there's nothing that's in the last few years in terms of audiences, in terms of people filling stadiums, that indicates that people are turned off by the new information.
Well, from the macro to the micro, last night was our beloved Green Bay Packers preseason opener. And I did see, I think it was the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel headline online, was that the Packers were painful to watch last night. Did you happen to catch it?
I did not.
All right. Well, then I just wondered if you had any thoughts on our Green Bay Packers.
Oh, I have plenty of thoughts on the Packers. I thought you meant that specific report. The Packers, it's interesting. Football always works that way. The Packers barely squeak into the playoffs and then win three road playoff games. And then, unfortunately, I'm a Steelers fan. You beat my beloved Steelers in the Super Bowl. And then the next year you go 15-1, which is last year. Aaron Rodgers has probably the best season a quarterback has ever had in the history of football, which is saying a lot. Then you get bumped in the first round by the Giants. So if anyone pretends that they have a handle on this, they really don't. I think the Packers are loaded. The NFL is a very quarterback-dependent league, and I know this will upset some people in New England and New York and in Pittsburgh, but you have the best quarterback in football, and it's not even close. So as long as you have that and he stays upright and healthy and the team is able to still stay relatively healthy as a whole, you know, you guys will win 13, 14 games, and I see no reason why you can't go back to the Super Bowl.
Well, good. It is a little bit ironic, I guess, that the headline was that the Packers are painful to watch last night when we are talking about this morning. normally we're upset if our team loses. We don't, though, find pain in seeing those bone-crunching hits, though, most of the time, do we?
No, we don't. And I hate to use pretentious terms like duality, but it sort of speaks to ours. You know, we certainly are, as a species, on top of the food chain. But we certainly have, I think history shows very well, that we have a very dark, violent, savage streak to us. We like to sort of mitigate that when possible, but we are animals. And while we certainly appreciate nuance and civility and diplomacy, we enjoy watching people hit each other. I'm not sure what that's about, but we, on some level, do enjoy that. And it's not just football, by the way. It's people, you know, look at the explosion of MMA. These are people fighting in a cage, pounding each other, a helpless defender. He's just sitting on top of him and smashing his face. I don't find that enjoyable. I don't find it aesthetically pleasing. I don't find anything enjoyable about that. But we, as a species, seem to enjoy some level of violence. You know, what George Will misses, he led his column about a man named Ray Easterling. Ray Easterling was a Chicago Bear who played from 1972 to 1979. And the influx of larger men, the 300-pounders, as Mr. Will referred to them, didn't start until 1980. So, as a matter of fact, you can go back 100 years and find that there are baseball catchers. They're now linking dementia with baseball catchers. First of all, they didn't have the advanced equipment that they have now. They didn't have proper face gear and face guards, and they were getting hit with all those foul tips, and they were getting hit at home plate by people trying to score runs. So the term, the earliest term that we had to describe this, as barbaric as it sounds, is punch drunk. I'm sure everybody's heard that term. And, of course, that's a boxing term. So, but what we're talking about, no matter the sport, is we're talking about people who are punch drunk. Now, you had it more, it's more prevalent in boxing because the head trauma is more frequent and more profound. But that's basically what we're talking about, the brain rattling inside the skull, which creates those proteins, which creates CTE, which, of course, starts the domino effect of ALS and depression, and unfortunately and tragically, suicide. But to get back to your original point, I guess we can pretend we don't enjoy watching someone get their bell rung, but we do.
We are talking with Jason Keidel. He's a sports writer for WFAN, the CBS affiliate in New York. We are talking about football. Has it become too violent, or do you enjoy the violence of football? Do you think football's days are numbered? What do you think, if anything, should or could be done to keep the players safer? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Nationally syndicated columnist George Will made some headlines this week when he said that football today is too rough for players' bodies to handle, leading to more serious injuries and in some cases death, hinting that we are seeing the beginning of the end of football. And our guest disagrees with George Will and says we are not witnessing football's demise. We welcome your thoughts and questions for him. Checking our weather forecast for today, it's going to be sunny and mild with highs in the low to mid-70s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 8 o'clock, it's our Friday Week in Review. We'll have two guests debating and discussing the week's top news stories after 8 o'clock. And it's your views on the news after 4 o'clock this afternoon during At Issue with Ben Marins. Right now we are talking about football with Jason Keidel, sports writer for WFAN, talking about his recent column, Are We Witnessing Football's Freefall? And our first caller for him is Grant in Platteville. Hello, Grant.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you think?
I think that although football is very violent, Jason's absolutely correct in that the viewership is way too high. It's way too popular for it to fall off. And he's absolutely right about humans enjoying violence and football being an outlet for that.
Yeah, so it's not going away anytime soon. Could lawsuits and the like, though, Jason, force changes somehow that would make football lose its appeal?
It could. Just to piggyback real quick on what Grant just said, to give you an idea of the popularity of the league, you asked me how popular the league is. You know, last year they just signed a 9-year deal, the NFL did, with Fox, CBS, and NBC, which pays the NFL $3.1 billion a year in television rights. So that gives you an idea of the cash cow it is. The changes we're seeing are sort of in the superficial stages right now. Again, reduced practices, reduced contact practices, which is when people get hurt, obviously, not just the walk-through practices, but helmet-to-helmet, pad-to-pad contact. There was actually an idea from the owners that they wanted to extend the season from 16 to 18 games, which was met with appropriate outrage, particularly by the players who are already risking life and limb and with 16 games and don't want to play 18 games. What you'll see is you'll see heavier fines, you'll see heavier suspensions for players who engage in illegal contact, and like I said, you'll see reduced number of practices. But beyond that, again, it doesn't address the basic physics of large, incredibly fast men running into each other at full speed. So the only way there will be any profound change, to get to your point, is if people stop watching. As long as they can sign these $3.1 billion a year deals with Fox, NBC, and CBS, they're not going to change because there's no motive. There's no motivation to change.
Next, we go to Freddie in New Berlin. Hello, Freddie.
Hi. Great topic, by the way. First of all, every sport is to some degree violent. And every athlete that puts themselves out there, whether it be gold medalists who have tried to compete in gymnastics or hockey games where people go to a fight and it turns out to be a hockey game, is putting themselves on the line. And it's a very interesting cultural phenomenon that people like to gather to watch. People celebrate our athleticism and human physicality. And I don't think you're going to be able to stop people from watching it because it's a secular religion. And as such, you can't really stop that sort of thing. It's very popular. It makes billions of dollars in just 6 months out of the year while football games are playing, and you can't stop it.
Well, there we go. And you agree, Jason.
Absolutely. And I think Freddie's talking about a culture. And, you know, I'm a child of the 80s. And look at some of the blockbuster movies from back then. We're talking about Terminator, Rocky, Rambo, Full Metal Jacket. We have a certain amount of bloodlust in us. And we can deny it or not, but it's there. And like I said, as long as the NFL keeps making money off this, they're going to keep doing it.
Well, you know, I don't know a lot about this, but way back when UW-Madison banned the college sport of boxing, and I'm wondering if you could ever foresee something like that a game is just deemed too dangerous and it's banned.
Yes, I could absolutely see that. I just don't see that happening with football because too many people are making too much money off of it. But yes, I can see that. Boxing, and I must say it, I made my bones as a boxing writer. I absolutely adored the sport. But anybody who boxes past the age of 25, at the latest 30, is almost certain to have dementia. Just unfortunately, look at one of my heroes, one of America's heroes, Muhammad Ali, you know?
Right. And I'm trying to think, hockey and boxing are violent sports too, but they're not as popular as football, right?
No. And hockey's largely, well, I don't mean to disrespect your audience because I know it's popular there, but hockey is more of a Canadian endeavor than it is an American. You know, the ratings bear that out. You know, the hockey is just now crawling out from labor strife and all that. It took them years to get back on the network television. But no, they're not as popular. And boxing's not as popular either. And I know why. They can make the same amount of money now playing other sports rather than getting their brains bashed in. Used to be in, it's hard to believe, but it's true. Back in the 1950s, when guys like Mickey Mantle and Joe DiMaggio were playing, guys had to have jobs during the off season because they weren't making enough money. But now that's not an issue. So if a young man is, let's say, 200 pounds and incredibly gifted athletically, he can play basketball or baseball. He doesn't have to box anymore. So he has more options because those sports now pay enough. But the violence is, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your view, a very much a part of it. So, you know, they are beautiful to watch. There's nothing more beautiful than a perfectly thrown and caught pass. And there doesn't need to be no one needs to get knocked out in the making of that movie. But up until a couple of years ago, ESPN had a show called, or a segment called Jacked Up, where they actually celebrated guys getting knocked out. There was a public outcry, and they removed the segment. But that's how much we enjoy it.
Well, you know, I am a Green Bay Packers fan. You have to be if you are born and raised in Appleton, Wisconsin, just south of Green Bay. But I love watching this game in part because it's fun to gather with friends and family. It's the tradition of the game. Aaron Rodgers is awesome, but I can't say I do enjoy when somebody gets hauled off the field on a stretcher. Is it the violence that people really are attracted to in this game?
If you want my honest answer, yes. Yes. Again, it's a combination of things. It's a confluence of things, of events. It's their athletic splendor because most people, let's say, I generally speak for young men because I was a young man one time. We watched football. We played football in playgrounds and sandlots, or in my case, often in Central Park. And then once we realized we weren't good enough to play major college or pro ball, still lived through football players vicariously through the television set. So part of the appeal is watching guys get knocked out.
Let me hold you there, Jason, because we do have news from National and Wisconsin Public Radio coming up, and then we'll continue talking about football and whether or not we are witnessing football's free fall with a guest who says no. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It is 7:36 on this Friday, August 10th. Columnist George Will says, are you ready for some autopsies with the start of a new football season? A recent column by George Will sparked a national debate of sorts. In it, he says that football is too risky, it can't be fixed. And he also hinted that we could expect a decline in the popularity of football, in part because of nervous parents.
We now, in our hyper-cautious parenting, put crash helmets on children riding tricycles. And how many of these parents are going to let their children go out and play football once they learn, again, the chronic, the cumulative effect of small brain trauma?
So would you let your son or daughter play football? Or do you think the risk of concussions or serious injury is too great? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And overall, do you agree with George Will that football is just too violent? Do you think football's days are numbered? Well, our guest says no, he disagrees with Will. And he says we are not witnessing football's demise. He is Jason Keidel, a sports writer for WFAN, the CBS affiliate in New York City. And he wrote a piece, Are We Witnessing Football's Freefall, that we have, along with George Will's column, posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So Brad on Facebook says, it is hard to be a fan because the players are always getting hurt. It is too violent, and players are wrecks later in life and broken down. I would never let my kid play football or box. So, Jason, maybe football could go away because we're not going to get any new players? What about that?
Well, I think that sounds lovely in theory, but I don't think in practice it's going to happen. There's another angle to consider here, which is the socioeconomic angle. Let's say a young man is growing up in the projects, and he is not afforded the best parenting or the best education or the best resources, and he has an opportunity to play college football, and with that comes a free scholarship, a free education, a college degree. And if he's gifted enough, and he's drafted by the NFL, millions of dollars. That is, he has an opportunity to not only take care of himself, but his kids, his parents, everyone he cares about. That's a very, very difficult thing to turn down. And I think that history has shown that, young men, particularly athletes, are willing to sacrifice long-term for the short-term ephemeral glory. If you're going to waive a $10 million contract in front of a 22-year-old young man, and his other option is to work in the marketing department for $50,000 a year, that decision kind of makes itself.
Yeah. And we touched on it in the first segment, but what effect will the more than 3,000 plaintiffs in a lawsuit arguing that the NFL didn't do enough about the head injuries, or I guess let the players know about the risk, what effect might that have on the league's future?
It's a serious problem. It's a serious problem. Again, we're not inside the plaintiff's information. We don't know what information they've gathered. We might have mass settlements. It will have a profound effect, but I think people often refer to the NFL as Teflon, and history has borne that out to be true. You've had several startup leagues from the AFL in the 60s to the USFL, Donald Trump's league in the 80s. We have the concussion problems. The NFL just seems to prosper no matter this. I mean, even during this hideous recession we've had over the last, whatever, 6-7 years, or maybe 4 or 5 years, the NFL has only grown in popularity and in revenue. It just seems to be an unstoppable force. And also, there's another thing to consider, which is we're talking about a very microscopic portion of the population. There are probably less than 1,000 people playing in the NFL out of 6 billion people on Earth. So it's not as profound as we'd like to think it is. We're talking about a very small segment of the population who are deciding that it's worth risking their life and limb for the glory. And then, again, that goes back to the person's right to make a choice. Now, will more parents preclude or prevent their kids from playing football? Perhaps, but even if that's reduced by 10% or 15%, I don't think that will have a deep impact on the future of the league. And again, as long as they're signing these multi-billion-dollar-a-year contracts for television rights, who's going to stop them?
Let's go to Eric in Viroqua next. Hello, Eric.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm fine. What do you think?
Well, I just wanted to comment on the talk about humans enjoying violence, and I think that not all of us do, and I think that we can transcend that. And so I think over time, while, you know, America is a culture, has a culture of violence, I think that we can transcend that, and I think over time that we can see that football is very dangerous for our children, and we can enjoy other things that give us glory and make us feel good, but it doesn't have to be steeped in violence and a culture of violence.
You want to react to that, Jason?
Yeah, well, first of all, he's right. We can transcend it. We often do. But they aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. In other words, we can be civil creatures and still enjoy watching a violent football game. That might sound like a very drastic contradiction, but it's not. A person can be wholly nonviolent and still enjoy watching a Sylvester Stallone movie or watching the Super Bowl or watching a boxing match. You know, we are not participating. We are, in terms of, we are paying to see it, but we are not actually engaged in the violence. We're doing it vicariously through other people, and we've been doing that for thousands of years without football.
Thank you, Eric. Bob in Richland Center is with us now. Hello, Bob.
Hi. My son, back in 2008, 2009, suffered essentially, he got one mild concussion, never losing consciousness, playing JV football, which he didn't even tell us about or anybody else, which happens quite a bit in any sport. And then he got, over the course of the next year, about 4 concussions playing varsity basketball as a freshman and sophomore. And he, his UW doctor then stopped him from playing any contact sports after his sophomore year. And he's like 6'6", about 250. And so he, you know, he loved the contact sports in that, but unfortunately he couldn't do it. Anyways, he was involved with the signing of the concussion bill. He spoke before a press conference. We went to Lambeau Field for the signing of the Wisconsin concussion bill. And when we were there, Mark Murphy, the president of the Packers, told us that every NFL team now is going to have computers on the sideline when one of the players takes a head hit, he's going to be immediately tested, impact tested. And impact testing is a computer. I don't know if you guys have talked about that yet, but it's a computerized test that gives a baseline for cognitive function. And that's really started to come down into the high schools. Here at Richland Center, a year after Brock suffered his concussions, our trainer and one of our doctors started baseline testing for all athletes.
Yeah, and Bob, let me just jump in because we're coming up on a weather break. The Wisconsin concussion bill, that's what that was all about, to make sure that players who might have suffered a concussion aren't back out on the field, making it even worse.
Exactly, and they have to be cleared by a medical professional. So, you know, I know that football is a violent game, but concussions can occur in any sport. As a matter of fact,
exactly.
You mentioned George Will. He's a huge baseball fan, and Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, actually now they look back and they think that Lou Gehrig might have actually died from problems with concussions because he got hit in the head by baseball so often.
And Bob, how is your son doing? Does he still suffer lingering post effects from the concussions?
Well, it's been a long journey, and he does have some issues, but he's doing really well. He's going to go to college next year. He's taken a really nice active role in promoting the use of impact testing and all that. But I have to say, you know, if you know, really, the thing is, he didn't have any. He never blacked out. But these mild concussions, we've learned so much just in the last few years. And I do think now the NFL is being proactive, but it can happen in any sport.
Yeah. Well, I do appreciate you calling, Bob, a very important perspective, and we wish you and your son the very best. So, Jason, a couple of important points there. Is this impact testing, a good thing?
Yes, well, I wanted to touch on something Bob said, which is another. You've asked me what measures the NFL has taken to decrease the amount of concussions. One other thing they've done is over the last 50 years, or as long as they've been playing football, the team doctor was little more than a shill for the team, a little more than a front man. What I mean by that is, let's say your most important player gets dinged up or his bell rung, as they say, and he wobbles over to the sideline. The team doctor takes a look at him, gives him an Oxycontin and says, "You're fine," and sends him back in the game. Well, that practice no longer exists. The doctor who now examines the player with a head injury is now entirely autonomous. The team cannot influence his decision. And if the doctor says the player cannot go in the game, there's absolutely nothing the team can do about it, and there are no repercussions for the player or for the doctor. In fact, the climate was so savage, has been so savage, that players actually took a source of pride in going back in the games after having a concussion. Well, now that decision has been taken from them, which is a very good thing.
Bob also thought that concussions really can happen in any contact sport.
Absolutely. I mentioned at the beginning of the program that we're now learning that baseball catchers, from all the foul tips and collision at home plate, were suffering from mental illness as far back as 100 years ago. They're finding now that they suffer from alcoholism, depression, suicide, murder, and all this is because they didn't have proper face masks.
We are talking with Jason Keidel, sports writer for WFAN, talking about football and whether or not football has become too violent, whether or not we might be witnessing the beginning of the end of football, as columnist George Will hinted in a recent column. Jason says, no, we are not, and why he thinks that. Let's take one more call before our break. Jim in Eau Claire is next. Hello, Jim.
Hello. I'm kind of torn here listening to you talk about it. And I was a high school football player, founded a means of getting a college education and played in college, and then moved on with my career. And I was blessed with daughters. And I've always said I'm glad I didn't have sons because I wouldn't want to have to make this decision whether to let them play or not. And I most likely wouldn't let him play because I'm so busted up from 8 years of football at a low level. I wouldn't want my kids to go through that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just curious, Jim, not to diminish what you went through and your dilemma here, but are you a football fan? Do you watch football?
Well, I'm a huge football fan, and I'm still involved in the game. I officiate now. I've coached in the past, so yeah, I enjoy watching the game, and I enjoy still being a small part of it. But I don't know if I'd want my children in it. I really don't think I would.
Jason?
Well, just to show you the power of the NFL, first of all, he made a wonderful point there, even though he's all busted up and he's glad he doesn't have to make that decision for the sons he never had, but he's still very deeply involved in football. Just to show you the extent, the scope, and the power of the NFL, not only do you have these 3,000 lawsuits to which you referred, but you also had an entire NFL team, the New Orleans Saints, who had a bounty system. They were paying their players to put the opponent in the hospital. Their head coach was suspended for an entire year. Their best defensive player, Jonathan Vilma, was suspended for an entire year. And yet the NFL's fine. It's bizarre, but it's absolutely fine.
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page if you want to react to this debate over football and whether or not it is just too dangerous. It can't be fixed, according to columnist George Will. Are football's days numbered? We are talking with Jason Keidel. He is a sports writer. His recent column is called "Are We Witnessing Football's Freefall?" He says no. Checking the weather forecast for today, it's going to be mostly sunny and mild with highs in the low to mid-70s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Go, Pat, go!
Go, Pat, go! All right, well, the Packers started their preseason with the game last night. They lost to the San Diego Chargers. We are talking about football and the future of football with Jason Keidel, who is a sports writer for WFAN, and with you, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We're talking about Jason's recent column, "Are We Witnessing Football's Freefall?" and wondering if football has become too violent. And Jason is a big Pittsburgh Steelers fan who says he is still bitter about the Super Bowl loss to the Packers in 2011. Jason?
Well, you probably know this already, Joy, but we football fans are not only passionate, but we're very obdurate. We're very stubborn. So, of course, Green Bay did not win that game. We lost it, you know. Rashard Mendenhall fumbled in the third quarter when we were about to take the lead and you won. Now, but, I mean, in all fairness, sour grapes aside, yeah, you guys went on a roll that year, and you were not going to be stopped. It's interesting. We always talk about home field advantage being imperative in football, yet the last two teams to win the Super Bowl, the Green Bay Packers and the New York Giants, basically won all their games on the road on the way to the Super Bowl. So if you're good, you're good. And you guys have something that can't be bought, and that is a great quarterback. I cannot, and I'm not saying this just to kiss up to your listeners, Aaron Rodgers is so good, it's frightening. Frightening. So as long as he stays healthy, you'll be okay.
It's awesome. But anyway, very, very briefly, any comment on the first female NFL ref who played, who refereed that game last night?
I think, frankly, I don't know why it took so long, to be honest with you. I think the NFL and sports, particularly NFL, has been very progressive, very proactive when it comes to things in terms of charitable endeavors, in terms of diversity. You know, I do take credit. My Steelers implemented what's called the Rooney Rule, whereas every NFL team with a coaching vacancy must interview a minority candidate. With all that in mind, with all that as a backdrop, I'm very surprised it took all these years for a female to get on the field. But I'm glad, and I hope to see more of it.
Yeah, me too.
And I want to say one last thing, if you don't mind.
Sure.
There was piggybacking the gentleman whose son has had concussion problems without playing football. I was wondering, and I think this might be interesting to find out, I will look into this, if there is a test that doctors can implement to determine if we are predisposed to concussions, because I'm sure you've heard the term somebody's got a glass jaw or somebody's got a great chin. All that refers to is someone's ability to deal with a concussion. So if we can determine if a young man or a young woman is predisposed to concussions, that would help us make that decision a lot better.
Yeah, it would. Joe in Milwaukee has been waiting. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hi. I wonder what Jason thinks about the suggestion that players be forced to play both offense and defense. And this would somewhat end the size discrepancy. You wouldn't have 400-pound linemen. Football players would look more like maybe rugby players in size, and that might slow the game down a little bit and even out the size of the players and maybe reduce the concussions.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you think that's a possibility in the future.
What about that, Jason?
Well, I think that's a fascinating idea. Here's the problem with it. The NFL's become so specialized now. You've got to coach for everything. You've got to coach for your punter, your place kicker, your wide receiver, your lineman, your tight end, your linebackers, your secondary, your quarterback. It's become so specialized that there's no way, I don't think the human body can endure playing double the snaps he's playing now. So let's say the defense and offense play about 50 plays a game. You're asking a guy to go from 50 plays to 100 plays a game. I don't know that he could physically endure that. And secondly, I don't know that he could gather or absorb all the data. You know, these playbooks are bigger than the Bible. I mean, these people are carrying now playbooks, you know, hundreds of pages long. And to have something like that for offense and defense and to play both positions, I like the idea. In fact, a long time ago, people did play both positions, but I think the game is too sophisticated for that to happen now.
Thank you, Joe. Now John in Richland Center. Hello, John.
Hi. Hey, I had way too many concussions, and I had the blood going down the back of my throat, and my eyes looked like raccoons.
Oh. Playing football?
No, I was. My mother said I had testosterone poisoning.
All right, don't quite get that, but I, I think I'm going to go to Cliff in Madison last. Hi, Cliff.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to weigh in with my perspective and my
very briefly,
my belief.
Cliff. I'm sorry.
Sure. I don't think football is in danger of going away. I think the demand for it is too strong, and whether you like it or not, this society enjoys violence. If you look at what works in Hollywood, but even more so, look at the rise in MMA, which is mixed martial arts, and it is a regression in the way we're competing. It's just brutal and aggressive with people trying to break each other's limbs, and there's kicking and kneeing to the face. And I think if you look at the NFL as a product, the demand is so high because people enjoy watching violence.
Thank you, Cliff, and that's your point, Jason.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, maybe we'll leave it there. All right. And you're predicting for us, though, that our Packers are likely to go back to the Super Bowl.
Well, I say the Packers are going to go 13-3. You've got the Lions to worry about, but you're better than the Lions. The Lions are a little bit too young. It's either going to be the Giants, the Packers, or the 49ers. And I think right now, before the season starts, I think the Packers are the best.
Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Joy. Thank you.
Jason Keidel, sports writer for WFAN, CBS affiliate in New York. His recent column is called "Are We Witnessing Football's Freefall?" Thanks very much to Bill Martins for producing this hour. Thanks to Amanda Magnus for on-air direction and to Naya Mukherjee for on-air production. And thanks to Naya Mukherjee, who has been our summer intern here on the Joy Cardine Show, answering your calls every morning from 6 until 8 or 9 and producing many programs. This is her last day, and she has been just wonderful. And we wish her luck in her future endeavors. Thank you, Naya. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.